Who are you?
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zata Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line. Don't want to keep our guest waiting. Former Astro General Manager Tim Purpura, who helped guide the Astros to their first ever World Series back in 2005. Tim, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees this afternoon. ALCS roster just came out for the Astros. I'm curious because you've had to deal with this now, a little bit different now. They have 26 players as opposed to 25. You know, different rules, three-batter minimum, didn't have that back in 2005. What are these days like when you're trying to get the roster crunch and finalize that ALCS roster?
Well, they're very hectic because you've got to take in all the considerations of, you know, who you're playing, what their strengths are, what the matchups are between certain pitchers and certain hitters, particularly your starters, and then, you know, your middle and back end relievers. So you're weighing all those things out, along with injury history. You know, it's very difficult now to replace guys, but, you know, and you don't want to do that. You want to have a guy who is 100%. So, you know, the injury factor comes into it. So you're consulting with your medical staff and, you know, trying to get to a place where you can put the best 25 or now 26 players on the field so that you can have your best chance to win.
Tim, I'm curious, after watching this new playoff format and the revised wild card, we were talking about the fact that having seen the Braves get eliminated and the Dodgers get eliminated and almost the Mets, another 100-win team, eliminated. Your thoughts from a management perspective, did they get it right? How much can they or will they tweak it so that maybe it can be a little bit more weighted towards the teams that earned it for 162 games?
Well, you know, my first impression is it's a heck of a lot better than a one-game winner-take-all format like we had. Mm-hmm. You know, we had, you know, some of those. And when I was with the Rangers, you know, we had 2 years in a row where we got eliminated in the first, you know, that first play-in game. So it's better. The wild card is better in the five game format, but it's not perfect. I agree with you guys. It puts so much pressure on every single win, you know, that there's no let up. There's no room for error, and you have to get it right. And you know, it's really sad to see those teams go out because that's, you know, I think that fans want to see those elite teams. And you know, and that's not to say that teams that made it are not elite, but, you know, the teams that, you know, have nationwide, you know, audience and things like that. So the only alternative then is to go to a seven game. And, you know, I think that would be the most fair approach. But with the schedule and, you know, NFL football and, you know, the TV networks, it's a hard thing to get something like that through. So I may be wrong, but I think we're probably going to see this five-game format, you know, continue.
I don't hate seven-game ALDS at all. I hate the five-game series. I hate the short series. All of a sudden, a team that won 110 games can be gone in three, which it's always been the case. HRMP guest line, Tim Purpura, former Astro general manager, guided the Astros to their first World Series appearance in franchise history in 2005. What's your takeaway of this series? Look, Yankees, Astros, third time ALCS last 5 years, certainly no love lost between the two fan bases.
No, absolutely not. That's what makes it fun and interesting. But, you know, I think they match up pretty well. You know, I know this year I'd give the nod certainly to the Astros on season series and, you know, the you know, that aspect of it. I certainly like the Astros pitching, you know, better than the Yankees, although, you know, they've got a big time ace over there, you know, like we do. And, you know, so, you know, there's a lot to be said for, you know, the depth of the Astros. It's really, really phenomenal to me to see, you know, how every position has, you know, multiple options for Dusty Baker. And, you know, just looking at the games last week and, you know, the depth of the bullpen in the 18-inning game was phenomenal. So, you know, I think there's a lot of depth in the Astros, you know, lineup. And, you know, I think the Yankees, you know, are, you know, a good opponent for us.
Well, Tim, I'm curious if you've ever had the kind of moment, and if you did, how you go about it. We see the fact that, you know, James Click was, he had the foresight to go with the Jeremy Peña and let Carlos Correa walk out the door. That, you know, the Astros pulled the trigger on a move that at the time saw a veteran reliever in Josh Fields go to the Dodgers, and you got a guy back at that at the time, you said who, that's turned into Yordan Alvarez. Has there ever been, or what are some of the moments or a moment in your career where you look back and say, whether you say it publicly or not, I got to go buy bigger boxer shorts because I just pulled one off and really did my job as good as I can do it?
Well, I don't know if I can. I've got one that can equal those because they're certainly phenomenal. Jeremy Peña is, you know, from the first time I saw him hit on the field, and take the field, I thought this guy's really, really special. And so I think it then cemented in my mind, you know, why, you know, the Astros did what they did and let Carlos go. And, you know, Jeremy Peña is just such a tremendous, you know, development that they have in their system. But I think the one thing, you know, and it's that kind of gift that keeps on giving was, you know, we made a decision in 2007 to sign a 5'4", 5'5" second baseman from Venezuela for $15,000. And, you know, he's now the best second baseman, you know, in baseball. So, you know, that's the one I look back with pride that, you know, we didn't let his height get in the way. You know, we measured, you know, his talent and his heart.
And one of the greatest moves in Houston Astro history. I mean, everybody talks about Bagwell, Verlander, yeah. Yordan. That's certainly up there amongst them. Tim Papura joining us on the HR&P guest line. Tim Papura guiding the Astros to the World Series in 2005. Tim, I'm curious from your perspective, being in the business as long as you have, being in that GM seat, James Click does not have a contract for next season. There's been rumors that, you know, it depends on what happens in the playoffs. Maybe that's not even going to be a factor. Maybe maybe Jim Crane has his eyes on Sig Meidel, who was the former assistant general manager under Jeff Luhnow with the Houston Astros. What do you think that James Click, as he's watching this playoff run, what's going on in his mind?
Well, I think it's probably not even entering his mind because you have so much going on. You know, when you're in that situation, and you know, you're not thinking about yourself. You're thinking about your team. You're watching the games. You're, you know, monitoring the medical information. You're working with the traveling secretary to get from town to town. You know, sometimes having to make changes, and you know, it's tickets. Tickets become a huge issue in your life. You have people, relatives that you didn't even know start hitting you up for tickets. So, but it's just so you know, encompassing. And I'll tell you a quick story. When in 05, you know, we were in the LCS, and my wife and I had been talking, you know, and she said to me, you know, hey, don't you have some bonuses in your contract for, you know, getting into different rounds of the playoffs? And I said, yeah, I never thought about it. Yes, we do. So, you know, if it wasn't for her bringing it up, I wouldn't have thought about it. Because, you know, it's really the last thing you have in your mind. And, you know, you want to have, you know, the next step after you get done with, you know, the playoffs is, you know, making sure your manager is secure, making sure your coaches are secure. You know, you're putting all that first, and really your contractual situation, I think, comes last.
Tim, curious because of the fact that, and it's bothered the hell out of me, that people have questioned Justin Verlander because of his first start of the playoffs against Seattle, and then going back in his last six starts, which haven't been great in the postseason, but people forget that he won the Cy Young. As a general manager, your thoughts on having JV coming back and bouncing back after the Seattle start and the people that keep pointing to the playoff history?
I put all my money on him. You know, I just think he is, you know, such a warrior, you know, and he reminds me so much of Roger Clemens, who, you know, we had for 2 years, and you know, the mental toughness, you know, the physical, you know, acuity with the way they pitch and, you know, the way they, you know, they go after things. They're both warriors. And you know, we're lucky to be able to see a guy like him work, you know, work in the Astros organization and have an impact on the younger players. But I'll take him any day, you know, maybe over anyone, because, you know, we know what he's been through. You know, he has been very loyal to the organization, and the organization has been very loyal to him. But, you know, we have that kind of a competitor. You know, he ranks up there, like I said, for me with Clemens and Ryan. You know, these guys are just go all out. They've got, you know, tremendous stuff. They're smart. You know, they're prepared, and, you know, they're not going to let anything stop them. So I'll take Justin Verlander any day.
Tim, thanks so much for taking a few minutes hanging out with us this afternoon. We certainly appreciate it, and enjoy the ALCS.
Thanks. Appreciate you having me on, guys.
You got it. Tim Papura, former Astro general manager, guided the Astros to their first World Series in 2005. He put all his money on Justin Verlander.
Was he smitten with Roger? Was he a cutie?
Did he call him a cutie? I couldn't tell. 713-780-ESPN.
Did Tim Papura call very positive.
Roger Clemens a cutie? I'm sure, other than Mrs. Clemens, that Roger doesn't get called a cutie by too many
people.
Probably
not. Probably but again, not. Kudos to Tim Papura when people forget of all the major moves that happened in Astros history. He was a part of that $15,000 signing of Jose Altuve.
He oversaw it. He certainly did. 713-780-ESPN. Timmy P said he would put all his money on Justin Verlander. Would you? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We were wondering if Tim Papura said, if he called Roger Clemens cute. Because, I mean, if you called Roger Clemens cute back in the day, I mean, that's a fastball high and tight. He was throwing bats at Mike Piazza because he sawed off Mike Piazza. Like, Roger Clemens is not the dude that you call cutie.
Did you happen to hear Johnny G and the bench, and John specifically, call Roger Clemens out on that?
No, I didn't.
Well, Raj goes, oh, John, you're going to get a little funny with me now, aren't
really?
You? Oh, he got a little, he didn't get real salty, but he kind of came back in Granada. It was great stuff.
Roger's still that guy, isn't he?
Yep.
He's still that guy. Brendan listened back to it during the break, because we both thought he called Roger Clemens a cutie.
If you were on Twitch and saw Jeremy and I look at each other when he said that, we're like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, I thought he meant a cutie. But apparently, Brendan went back and listened, and he said...
Acuity.
Which I have no idea what acuity means, so what do I do when I don't know what a word means? I say define said word. Acuity. You want to take, like, Brendan was Mr. Brains over there. Look at the big brains on Brendan. He was the brainiac. Do you want to take a stab at what acuity means?
Well, the only way I've ever heard it, I've definitely heard mental acuity. I don't really know what it means, but I know it's a compliment. So somebody who is smart, thoughtful,
like their ability to hyper focus and dial in.
I would say that's probably a fair way to use that word.
Yeah.
I've definitely heard mental acuity used about athletes before.
The way that they use it in a sentence is actually intellectual acuity. So same thing. And the definition, Brendan, he nailed this. Maybe Brendan is that guy.
Well,
maybe
he
is
cheating.
That smart.
He had it up on his screen.
He probably did. It says that it is sharpness or keenness of thought, vision, or hearing. So it's acuity. Tim Papura using the big words with the Killer Bees, which
you got kids?
This might not be the demographic.
I'll let guests know in the future to dumb it down for
you. Yeah, he does. He needs to dumb it
Brendan,
down
do you
a little
know
bit
what a cutie
us.
Is?
Do I know what a cutie
Brandon,
is?
Yeah. He sees it every day from noon to three.
No. Not what I mean.
Yes, I know what a cutie is.
What is it?
Well, you referring to a cute person, or are you referring to an orange?
No. Yes, an orange. A small orange. Yeah, my kids love those little
trick
cuties.
Me.
Yeah, those little
oranges. I like them, too. They're pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, big fan. We went from Roger Clemens to Justin Verlander to a small orange on the Killer Bees.
Hit them high, hit them low, hit them where their oranges grow, people.
Did you catch that Papura said we and us? when talking about the Astros. Did y'all notice that?
I did catch that.
Yeah. I kind of like that. I kind of like that from Tim Papura. He also said, which I think was probably the quote of the interview. It's what we do. We bring out the best in people. Mm-hmm. I put all my money on Justin Verlander. Verlander, last six playoff starts, 0-4, 6.40 ERA, 9 homers in 32 and a third. The last time he pitched well in a playoff start was October 2019 against Tampa when he went 7 shutty. Are you putting all your money on Justin Verlander?
Well, he is, and I believe that I have said enough to say that I believe in him enough that I'm not turning my back on him, and I believe he should get the ball in game one, and I have the utmost confidence that he will do what we've seen him do for the majority of his career for the Astros. I can't change what he's done in the past. I can't tell you what happened in game one against Seattle, but I believe he can. And I believe that he is a workaholic enough and a student of video in the game to where he probably went back and spent countless hours trying to make sure it doesn't happen again. And he knows this lineup. And the lineup hasn't seen him all that much. They saw him once, and he was effective. I believe that Justin Verlander is going to pitch his tail off, and I'm not going to be like Tim Papura. I'm not going to put all my money on it. But I do believe that he is going to have success tonight.
Yeah, I wouldn't put all my money on anything. The thing with Verlander, too, it's like he doesn't need to be the Cy Young tonight. Like, he's not facing Gerrit Cole tonight. You're not asking Justin Verlander to outduel another tier one starting pitcher in all of baseball. I think Tyon's probably better than, like, people are giving him credit for.
He's a good pitcher.
I mean, he had an ERA in the threes. He throws six pitches at you. Like, he's quality pitcher. He doesn't walk dudes either. He's not going to beat himself. So, like, he's going to keep his team in the game. But it's a little different when you're trying to outduel Gerrit Cole and you're trying to outduel Jameson Taillon. I don't need to see seven shutout innings from Justin Verlander. Even if it's just a quality start, good enough for me.
Yeah, look, I mean, if he gets back into a quality start, that's all you could ask. I mean, you could ask for more, but that's the kind of start for bigger things to come. Because now he kind of gets that monkey off of his back and he erases a lot of the six consecutive bad starts to where he can build on that and say, hey, look, I had a quality start last time. If I got to face these guys again or, God willing, get to the World Series and have a chance to do something even better against a different team, I feel I have all the confidence in the world that I have escaped those demons and I am ready to put my best foot forward.
713-780-ESPN. That's where I'm at with Verlander as well. He talked about the pitching depth, which is a luxury for this team, the depth that they do have. I mean, Seth Martinez had an ERA like in the twos, and he's borderline not even on the roster. Which, by the way, thinking more on that and listening to Tim talk about, I know we didn't even get to the Martinez-Will Smith conversation, keeping Seth Martinez, who was like unheard of before this year, over a guy who did not give up a run for the World Series winning team last year. And I know the season that Will Smith had, but it's very easy to be like, yeah, we're going Will Smith because he's done it before, blah, 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 blah. That's a low-key bravado move by the Houston Astros.
It's the Janet Jackson theory all over again. I don't care that you were led the World Series champions in saves and had multiple saves in the World Series. I'm going with the guy that has been there, done that for us all season long that I believe could do it again if I called his number. And I believe that that's the exact way the Astros should approach all of these type decisions. You can't go based on their previous resume. You have to do, and even in the Verlander conversation, you have to base it on what they've done for this season. Seth Martinez's biggest hiccup came against the Yankees where he gave up a late ninth inning home run to Aaron Judge. But other than that, his ERA was absolutely stellar, and you believe that Dusty believes in him so he can get guys out if his number's called on and he can go for an inning or two. That's a guy that you don't have to use, but if you feel like you need someone to eat up some innings or do whatever you want to do to get a couple guys out, Dusty has confidence you can go to that guy. I think even Dusty, who wanted that lefty, who got the lefty that he desired that he's always had in his career in Will Smith, I think even Dusty by the end of the season said, yeah, no, I've seen enough. I can't trust this guy enough.
Yeah, I think that is what it came down to. Tim Papura, former GM, talked to, because I wanted to ask him the question about Click, because it's a really unique situation that you have a general manager who's basically playing for a contract, and I know that he can't really do anything at this point anymore other than, you know, deciding roster spot number 26 in this roster and having, a meeting of the minds and who's playing, who's going to be on the roster, et cetera, et cetera. I think Timmy P, quite honestly, took a little bit of the high road. Do you believe that the fact that James Click does not have a contract doesn't even enter his mindset day to day during this Astro playoff run?
Say that again?
Do you believe what Papura said about Click? Ask him about the contract.
Yeah.
Click doesn't have a contract. Papura said that he doesn't think it enters James Click's mind.
I don't.
I don't believe that for a second.
Here's how it goes in my mind. It's exactly what we just talked about with Justin Verlander. Publicly, you're not going to say that. But as a human being, as a competitor, as a person, as someone who believes that they are one of the best in their sport as a general manager, and they've done enough with the moves that we talked about, the Peña move and some of the things that he was able to do this season, the moves at the deadline with Vasquez and Mancini and all those kind of things. He's fortified this team. He's done his job since he's been here. I believe that at night when he is at the house and he is just getting ready for the next day, it bothers him, and it should, because we know that it's a performance-based league, both as coaches, general managers, and players. And if you perform and do your job, it's the same reason why coaches are never supposed to have lame duck seasons when they're in the final year of their deal. You're either going to get that extension or you're going to get let go at a certain point. But the fact that you are left to dangle in the wind in a team that's in the League Championship Series yet again with a chance to win a World Series, whether you like him or dislike him, it's very unfair to the man that has been in that position to do his job for the Astros.
I agree with that. But if I'm an owner of a team, I'm not in the market or I'm not in the business of being fair for like people that I employ.
Let me use a Branhamism on you. I think the way you read into things very astutely, it's in the tea leaves more so than even in the question you asked Papura. I think what it tells you is, it really does hinge on whether this team wins the World Series or not. I think that's a factor.
I think it's probably true, but I think that there is a plausible scenario where the decision's already been made.
That's possible.
And the result of this playoff does not affect the decision whatsoever.
Well, that goes to some of the stories that have said, look, Crane's the kind of guy that's not going to tell you until he has to tell you. He's not going to fire you. He's going to let your contract expire, but he starts to freeze you out. He doesn't talk to you very much, if at all. And he basically knows in his mind what he's going to do, and nothing's going to change it. I could see that, but I also think the same way we talked about Dusty and said, hey, it's really almost impossible to let go of a manager if he wants to be back, if he wins the World Series. I think there'd be a lot of people with a lot of fingers to be pointed and a lot of questions to be asked if you fire your general manager after the team wins the World Series.
The way that I look at those positions, though, and I admit that I look at these pretty uniquely. And look, I like James Click. I'm a James Click guy. I was reading a book today that had James Click in the book. So, like, I'm not anti-James Click. But the way that I look at a head coach position, other sports like football, basketball, the way that I look at a manager position, the way that I look at a general manager position, that's another position in my organization. A GM is no different than a shortstop. If I feel like I can upgrade in the offseason, even after winning a World Series at the shortstop position, I am upgrading at the shortstop position. If I am the owner of an organization and I feel like I can get my hands on a general manager who I think is better than the current general manager I have, that is a position in the organization I'm always looking to upgrade.
Yeah, no, and I get that. I'm not like you in the fact that as much as Nick Caserio has won me over, I just haven't been ever completely won over by James Click. I believe that there's too much of a mentality of the Tampa Bay system that he came from that still lingers for me to give him my utmost trust and respect, though he's made some great moves and made decisions.
I don't think that that's fair. I don't think it's fair to say that he has too much of a Tampa Bay philosophy, because I don't think that he's ever been cheap.
We don't know, right? We don't know ultimately, and we don't know if it's Crane or him. But to me, it's always about that you saw the shift in philosophy that just happened to sync up with him becoming general manager of, we no longer do long-term deals at big money. We don't have to spend all this money just because we have it. You know, we're going to still do things that we feel is best for the team, and sometimes what the fan base or you or I or others may believe is the right thing to do for this team.
They did that before they hired Click, too, though.
They started to show some of it, and obviously the Correa thing was a big glaring thing that everybody was looking at for this season. And I've been complimentary of the moves he's made at both deadlines. I thought that they were very savvy, you know, moves. I don't think that we saw any of those big moves. I don't think we saw the kind of things we saw when Jeff Luhnow was running this team. So maybe that's where I have a little less confidence than you do, but I don't think he in any way, shape, or form that he hasn't done his job since he took over.
6030 says, does Click decide the roster for each series in the postseason? Shouldn't the manager decide this? They're at the same table. They're deciding on this together. I think that I've always believed this with the Astros. I believe that Click has always had authority on the active roster, and Dusty Baker's always had authority on the lineup.
I think that's probably accurate. I think that I don't know who makes the final decision, and every organization is different and every power structure is different. But I obviously think at this point in the season, everybody has their say on the table before a decision is made. And whether it's a group decision or someone does have the final decision-making power, That's to be determined by every organization. But I don't think there's any scenario where the manager's input isn't heard loudly and clearly when you're talking about who stays and who goes.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The Astros have some rotation decisions to make. I don't love the idea of getting cute with the rotation, but something yesterday in the press conference of Dusty Baker has caught our attention. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. A buddy of mine called me today, said, you know what? I haven't been to Apollo in a while. You told me to go, so I went back. Dr. O was fantastic. He made sure I did my blood work so that we could figure out how much I had slipped and where I needed to improve. And after the results were in, he was looking forward to going back and getting back on a program because he had lost 45 to 50 pounds. And he said, I want to lose 20 more. And I know that if I go to Apollo Men's Health, they can get me where I want to go. That's why you should go too, because they help you win the day on a daily basis. You're not trying to win the Olympics. You're just trying to figure out, how do I have enough energy in my life to make sure I take care of all of my honeydews and my checklist of things to do? How do I get back on a workout program and stay with it, stay consistent, and see results? How do I lose weight, or how do I recover quicker? I need stuff for my smoothies and things that keep me on a healthier plan on a daily basis. All those things and more can be taken care of by Apollo Men's Health. Check out the website, apollomh.com. You'll find out all the services they offer and some that may actually be able to help you. If there are some of those things, make an appointment right there online. When you do, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Then let the process go from there. Go into that appointment with an open mind. Answer their questions honestly. Tell them what you're trying to achieve, what your goals are, and where you're struggling. They're going to put you on a plan that works. They're going to get your results. They're fantastic people that care about you on a daily basis. You mentioned my name, Joel Blank. Free B12 shot or body composition analysis on your first official visit. And from there, if you, again, are honest with them, they'll get you where you need to go. They're good people doing great things on a daily basis, and your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself. Go to Apollo Men's Health.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, the Astros have some decisions to make with their rotation. We know that they're going Justin Verlander tonight. That's the obvious. They're supposed to announce a Game 2 starter around 2:30. We're going to try to... You know, if once we see that, we'll let you know, of course. Trying to figure it out. Like, I'm kind of the thought that you don't get too cute with the rotation. Like, last rotation, you went JV, you went Fromber, you went Lance. There's some debate on who was going to go game four. Dusty said that it was going to be Verlander. But then he said yesterday it was Javier. So, like, we really don't know. My guess is that it was Javier because we didn't see him in game three. He wasn't available. Yesterday during the press conference, Dusty Baker was asked this question about the rotation, which I just want to play the clip first and then get into it. Here was Dusty Baker yesterday at his presser.
When you guys were figuring out your rotation with the 3-7 without an off day, was it important that your game three starter was comfortable working on 3 days rest if he was needed potentially for a game seven?
Yes. Yep. And, you know, a lot of that depends on the strength of the person. Mental and physical strength of the person, you know, who has the most resilient arm, you know, all that comes into play. And also you have to be aware and cognizant of the future of that player.
So that was Dusty Baker yesterday on the idea of what they might do with the rotation, saying that you need somebody strong for a game three, that the way they can bounce back in a game seven. If you map up the rotation from like a five, from a seven games in 8 days, yep. Justin Verlander game one, normal rest. Fromber game two, normal rest. McCullers game three, normal rest. Javier, probably, maybe Garcia, both of them would be on normal rest in a game four should they not be used out of the bullpen any game prior to that. Justin Verlander would line up on normal rest for a game five. Fromber would line up for normal rest in a game six. But game seven would be on short rest for whoever the game three starter's at. I figured they would just go ahead and go bullpen day, kind of what you did. If you're in a game seven, go a bullpen day where, you know, you basically do what you did with Seattle once McCullers was out of the game. Everybody gets an inning. You have Garcia who can go long or Keeney can go long. Maybe somebody could bounce back on, you know, 2 days, 3 days rest, pitch an inning or two. But hearing that bite that we just played for you, I think they are going to switch it up. I think they're going to change it. And the first thing I would point to, you probably noticed the voice that asked that question. It was the Houston Astro TV voice, Todd Callis, who's off. Like, it's his off season. They stopped working at the end of the regular season because the AT&T doesn't carry the playoff games. Everybody who asks a question during a press conference has a reason for asking the question. When it's Brian McTaggart, he wants a quote. He wants something to put on his video
writing
on Twitter.
For a column.
Mark Berman maybe wants to tweet out a video or talk about it on his newscast. Chandler Rome trying to get some piece of information or a quote to use in a story. Think to yourself, why is Todd Callis asking a question? What is the motive with Todd Callis asking a question to Dusty Baker in that setting?
Well, it almost sounds scripted. And the way that it played out, that's the first thing that I was going to ask you. I was scratching my temple with an inquisitive face to basically say, sounded like everybody kind of had their ducks in a row for that question, how to ask it, and then how to answer it. And then, oh, by the way, whether you're leading the witness or not, it sounded like Dusty led you right into a guy needs to be resilient, a guy that's done it before that can bounce back on short rest, as opposed to guys that, you know, their arm has to be prepared for it. We know Lance has had medical issues in the past. It kind of sets the table for what wasn't said that will probably be said sometime shortly thereafter, which is Lance is going to be the game four starter and Javier is going to pitch game three.
You could, well, see, I actually think it's going to be different.
I don't.
I think that the game three starter is going to be Fromber. I think Fromber Valdez is going to be your game three starter. I think they look at Fromber as someone.
You don't think he's going to start tomorrow?
No. I think it's going to be Lance McCullers tomorrow. I think, or Javier. I'm more like, if I had to bet, I would bet more on Fromber starting game three than I would of any other game of this series, other than Verlander game one. Like, he wants somebody strong for game three. And Chandler Rome mentioned, too, in an article a few days ago, that it looks like they're going to go with a four-man rotation in the ALCS, which means your game three starter has to be able to start game seven. Lance McCullers isn't going to be the bounce-back guy from game three to game seven.
And he shouldn't be.
So he's either going in game two or game four. Whatever game that McCullers isn't going in, Javier, I think, would be like. So who's your game three starter? I would say it's Fromber, not Javier.
I say it's Javier simply because on the bounce back and because of his experience in the bullpen, he's the guy that's been there, done that, and he knows how to. His arm's going to react. He's reacted well. The thing that bothers me about it, if you're right, and Fromber's the guy, is the fact that Fromber on short rest hasn't done it a whole lot, I believe the mental psyche thing starts rolling into it more then. There's more to think about. There's more that he's going to be, like, calculating in his own head that I don't need in a game seven like that. That's why I believe it's Javier.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, and I could see that being the route that they go. I just know that, like, my biggest takeaway from this soundbite is that, one, it is calculated. Two, Lance McCullers isn't going game three.
No.
That is my biggest takeaway. It could be Fromber, it could be Javier. I can just say with a high degree of certainty, it's not Lance.
I completely agree with you. We're on the same page. Here's the one I'll throw back at you, too.
But so who did you say was going? But here's the.
I think it's JV, Fromber, and Javier. I think Lance goes game four.
Okay. See, because whoever's pitching game four is starting once. They're not pitching twice in this series.
I think that's a legit possibility.
That's why I think it's Javier. I don't think they're going to bump McCullers for Javier. I think that's why McCullers goes game two. That way you get him on full rest for a game six. I don't think that they're bumping McCullers for Christian Javier, unless he's hurt for some reason.
We're just throwing it all on the table and letting everybody make their own assumptions and decisions like we just did. I'll say the one thing that would be interesting, too, that I think is a factor, and that is Lance McCullers not pitching in the cold as much as possible.
Which would bump him up
right to
game two.
So if he does two, then that theory makes sense, because 2-6 would be in Houston to where his arm wouldn't have to deal with issues with cold weather. And we know that after the White Sox game in cold weather a year ago, that's where all the trouble seemed to come to a head. It's going to be a factor. I think for a lot of these guys, the one factor that kind of plays into it for the Yankees that the Astros are going to have to adjust to is they haven't had to pitch in cold weather basically all season, except for the start of the season when it really doesn't matter.
Oh boy.
And now they're going to have to go to New York and it's going to be chilly and it's going to be an adjustment. And I don't think you want Lance McCullers pitching in that environment.
I just pulled up the weather for the Bronx because I hadn't looked at it. I hadn't thought about it, which is failure on my part. It doesn't look terrible. Now it's going to be a little bit colder than a climate controlled dome that you have over at Minute Maid Park. Saturday is going to be pretty nice, and if I remember correctly, Saturday's kind of the early afternoon, early evening game, so you should be all right there. 67 high, low of 51,
nice,
but sunny.
Okay.
Like, that's a fine day for game three. Sunday, still the same weather, but showers in the PM, and they're playing in the evening on Sunday. Monday, showers. Tuesday, showers. This is seven games in 8 days. There's only an off day after game two. Like, what happens if there's a rain out in one of these games? Are we looking at double header? Or are you just tacking on a day at the end?
You're tacking on a day.
Cancel the postseason.
They're already stacking together seven games in an 8-day span because they're in a time crunch. When's the World Series start? They're not going to move the start of the World Series.
They might.
Absolutely cannot play a postseason doubleheader.
You will not do it.
They would. That would be the most unacceptable postseason thing I can ever remember.
No matter how much the powers that be and analytics and scheduling says this is the schedule and we're sticking to it. God has a say-so, and if they decide that there's a rain day involved in it, they are not playing a doubleheader. It is just like you saw happen in the Guardians series. They're going to have to do what they have to do, and they're going to have to extend the series.
There's only a day off between ALCS Game 7 and World Series Game 1. You play Game 7 on the 26th, day off the 27th, World Series Game 1 on the 28th. So you would just play on the 27th. They would do what the Yankees did.
If it goes
ALDS.
Seven,
if it were to go seven, you're just tacking on the day. I have another idea. I know a place that has a roof. Just don't let them fly back to New York if it's wet, if it's rainy. Like, don't run the risk. Let them play all those games at Minute Maid Park.
Someone said with all the money in the world that they print money in New York and that neither stadium couldn't figure out that they needed a roof.
Yeah,
especially if they always plan on playing postseason games.
Exactly. They should have a roof.
On a new elaborate Yankee Stadium?
I tweeted it in July when they were playing the Astros and there was that rain delay.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, there's no way in hell they're playing a doubleheader. They will extend the series. They will try and make it up somewhere, some way on the back end, or like you said, with that day off that going into the World Series. But, yeah, there's no way you can do that to either team.
713-780-ESPN. How do you stack up the rotation with the idea that your first three starters are all getting two starts, but the Game 3 starter has to pitch on short rest in a potential Game 7? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. You can see it today on Twitch. Doc Linville changed my hairline. He took it from an 8-head back to a 4-head. He gave me my hair back in front, and I couldn't be happier and more thankful that he did. The process that he uses is called neo-grafting, and he is the best, in my opinion, at doing it. He does it right here in Houston, Texas. He can do it for you, too. He's done it for Granado and Jake and Fred Fowler. He's done it for me, too, and I would recommend him to anyone because of the fact that he does what he says he's going to do, and he doesn't lie about any of it. There's a 95%+ rate of all the follicles that he moves from areas where you have a lot of hair, which is the sides and the back, where genetically, as he told me, you will never lose that. And he moves it to where you need it most, whether it be in the front like me or some people get that baboon's butt showing in the back where they need some help there. He can help you, and he can give you a whole new outlook on your hair and your confidence and your appearance by doing so. It's not sprays and creams and foams that just mask the problem. It's actually fixing the problem. And when he moves these follicles, that 95%+ success rate of all the follicles moved, it doesn't just move and stay for a short period of time. They're going to be with you for the long haul, and that's the best part about this process. You do it, you're done with it, and the hair stays too. Check them out, because right now they're doing something for ESPN listeners that they're not doing for anybody else. You mentioned ESPN 97.5, and you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff instead of the $150 it normally costs. Just go to 975hair.com and book your first appointment for that consultation. Again, it's free to you. No charge to you, no obligation to you. Go in with an open mind, ask all the questions. How long is the procedure? How long is the recovery? How long before I see the full results? What does it cost? Are there finance options? And again, that success rate of follicles moved 95%+ was the one that got me. Tell them I sent you by. I couldn't be happier with Doc Linville and his staff. You'll love them too. It's 975hair.com.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Join a culture map October 27th for the tailgates a week from tomorrow. This is not your typical party in a parking lot. This is tailgate is a celebration of the culture and lifestyle of sports and the fans who cheer them on. I think I'm going to try to head on over there. Branham wife and I. I guess I'm trying to sell you to go. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that. We're giving away a couple of tickets, though. Caller number 5 to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets to enjoy all the tailgate-inspired tastings from your favorite restaurants, including Street to Kitchen, Dish Society, Sticky's Kitchen, and many more, plus signature drinks, game day activities, and entertainment. Tickets are on sale now and include all food and drinks. Go to culturemaptailgate.com to get your tickets today and use code ESPN for $15 off any ticket type. It's going to be a lot of fun, kind of like a taste of the town, the tailgate from Culture Map a week from tomorrow. Get your tickets now. It's going to be some good times, good bites, good drinks. It'll be a great time to be had for all. 713-780-ESPN. Thinking a little bit more about this Astro rotation, like I totally think the Todd Callis question to Dusty Baker was a way of getting like, okay, just to get everybody on their toes that there might be a questionable change to this rotation, which I don't think it's that controversial or questionable, but I think it was very
almost analytical.
It was a mandated question. Maybe.
Let's
hey, Todd, you're coming to the press conference. You mind asking this question so Dusty can set the seed that we might be shifting our rotation a little bit? Dusty was asked if he was ready to name a game two starter yesterday. Said no. He said he'll tell you today, which should be around 2:30, 3 o'clock. You'll be heading over there for for game one of the. You'll be there for all four games if there are four games of the ALCS. So that'll be good. That'll be fun. The more I think of it, though, I don't think Lance McCullers is going to be the guy that bounces back, but I also think they want Lance McCullers to get two starts. If you're deciding between McCullers and Javier, maybe you would have a different answer, but if you're predicting what the Astros do, would you rather McCullers have two starts or Javier have two starts?
Well, I mean, based on what he did in the Seattle series, Lance McCullers showed you that he's capable, possibly, of being the old Lance McCullers. That's something that's hard to turn your back on. I just know that from a durability standpoint, you know that Javier has the rubber arm that's been able to, and he's got the plus-plus stuff, and he's been doing it for you all year, no matter what role you've asked him to fill. It's a tough question. It's a good problem to have. I think a lot of it will factor in terms of the elements, where the games are played, you know, and look at how...
Well, we know all those things. I mean, game one, game two in Houston, games 3 through 5 in the Bronx.
Right, that's why I'm saying, but I'm just saying, as we talked about, I don't think they want him to pitch in New York unless he has to because of the colder weather and the different conditions.
Whoever they're starting in Game 3, they want to start in Game 7.
And that's why I keep saying that I believe in Game 3 it'll be Javier, because I believe that he can come back on short rest. He has that rubber arm. He's durable. He's got great stuff. And he's had success against the Yankees already this season. That's why I believe it's him. And that's why, regardless of how you want to use Lance, one start or two start. The other thing is, you know that you can have Lance warming up in the bullpen like he's done previously in playoff runs and still have him be a factor in however the series plays out.
All the things you said about Javier, I agree with. And the pushback that I would have is that they can choose three starters today, which three of them they get two starts. And if there's three of them that get two starts, I don't think they go away from JV, Fromber, and Lance.
And that's not to say they can't change midstream too, right? But you're right. I see where you're coming from. I mean, obviously, with his resume and his ability to go out and attack hitters and be big in big games, Lance McCullers is a guy that you always want to have the baseball, but you're factoring in health. You're factoring in that unknown that has reared its head quite frequently in the last couple of years for Lance McCullers. And so that gives you a little bit more concern. And the fact that he hasn't pitched a full season for you, and quite honestly, he hasn't really pitched full seasons for you for the majority of his years with the Astros, but now you're really worried about health concerns. You've signed him long-term, and you want to see, you know, with each start, it's a consistent and constant evaluation of where is he? How's his arm reacting? Is he having any kind of discomfort? What's he feeling? How's he doing? I think that that's why that they're going to handle him with kid gloves a little differently than if this was Lance pre-forearm issues of the last year or so, then this would be a no-brainer.
That's why it eliminates him from the Game 3 conversation. But from a Game 2 conversation, he'd be in full day's rest for Game 2. He'd be full day's rest of on Game 6 as well.
Yeah. Both would be in Houston.
Yeah.
So they take the weather out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point, too. I hadn't thought about it from both of those starts also being in Houston. Yeah, I think they're going to end up going JV, McCullers, Fromber, Javier. We'll know a little bit more in about an hour. From a Yankees perspective, like it's interesting with their rotation, because We've seen that Aaron Boone's not scared of throwing somebody on short rest, but he's also not going to go Gerrit Cole tomorrow. Like, we know it's going to be Taillon in game one, Severino in game two. Then you're going to have Cole in game three, and then Cortez will be back for game four on full rest.
Yep.
And then kind of like game five, six, and seven is interesting because you just do the math. Taillon would be on full day's rest in five. You would have Severino full day's rest game six. And then you're looking at Gerrit Cole coming back on short rest for a game seven. I don't know how Cortez can pitch more than once in this series.
Well, I do. And that is if Taillon completely craps the bed, I think he reevaluates a lot of things. Not that Taillon takes that spot. I mean, that Cortez takes that spot.
Yeah.
But I think that much how we talked about evaluating JV a little bit deeper if he doesn't do well tonight, I think Taillon is basically, for the future of his series,
yeah, but
and how it relates to him.
But how does that get Nestor back in there?
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Two separate conversations.
Maybe Montas.
I don't think that that is factoring into Cortez. I think that's factoring into who he's going to start in games five, six, and seven. I think that Taillon, if he doesn't pitch well tonight, I think Taillon might have seen any other chance of pitching go right to the bullpen. I think that he'll shake it up. Maybe a Frankie Montas. Maybe there's something else that he can do to mix it up. As it relates to Cortez, he's been so good for you, it's hard to believe that he would only start one game in the series, and he has started on short rest. I just don't know because of the schedule.
The only way you could do it is if you go Cole short rest for game two. He'd be on 3 days rest for game two. I don't think so either. Then you would bounce back Cortez on short rest for game three. Then you could have Cole on full rest for a game six, and then Cortez short rest game seven.
I think ideally,
that's three times short rest. I don't think.
No, I don't either. I think ideally if they get a big lead or they get up big in Cortez's start, they'll shut him down earlier than they normally would, hoping that he can bounce back to be somewhat of a relief somewhere down the line, probably in a game seven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then he would piggyback. You would piggyback a Cole on short rest with a Cortez on short rest, and say it's Charlie Morton and Lance McCullers 2022.
He would have 2 days. He would have 2 days. You go Cole for like four innings, Cortez for like two.
If you keep his pitch count down, get him out earlier than you normally would, then you can understand how that could be a factor.
Yeah, I think that's the plan. 5619 is spamming us with this question. Not sure if y'all got this. If so, sorry for the repeat. Yeah, we got it several times. Which player is more likely to sign with the Yankees this offseason, Carlos Correa or Justin Verlander?
honestly, I think they could look at both of them, and I think both would consider it. I think that, you know, if the Yankees are willing to give Carlos Correa shortstop, and a boatload of money, and it's a big if, but if they're willing to give him a bag and the shortstop position, then I think that he would have to consider it. But I think that Verlander, looking to win, knows that if he goes to the Yankees, all he's got to do is sacrifice his mustache, and he could he could be a part of the evil empire.
Is there a part of you guys that would find that funny if both of those guys weren't there?
Well, oh, both, sure, from I the think fan base.
From the fan base, it would be highly... We talked about the fact that from Beltran to Marwin, it's one thing. But if you go out and you get Correa...
Especially Correa.
That's different.
Especially an offensive player.
A big-time offensive player. A big-time factor offensive player.
I think that Verlander's more likely of the two because they like this young shortstop that they have. They think he's the future at the position. Now you can move Correa to third, which is an option that I've been mentioning quite often. Let him bulk up. Let him hit some home runs. Of the two that it would bother me the most, though, it would bother me more if it was Verlander that went to New York. Now you add like a critical piece to their rotation, could potentially face them down the road. I'd much rather...
Well, and you reunite
avoid Verlander than Correa.
You reunite the top half of your 19 staff on the team that couldn't beat you, and realize then that it does become laughable, but also very, very painful to say you couldn't beat us. So not only did you join them, you can't beat them. Join them by getting Cole, but then you had to get Verlander too.
Yeah, I'm out on that. I want nothing. I don't want Verlander in a Yankee uniform. I can live with Verlander being on another team next year. I couldn't live with Verlander being on the Yankees.
From their perspective, who would have more issue with considering it? Because I think JV always hated the Yankees when he was a Tiger, and then he went right into the Houston culture to also hate the Yankees.
Uh-huh.
And we know how much Correa was vocal about hating the Yankees and all the crap they dealt with.
I think Correa kind of fits into that vibe there.
Like, I think
Latino community.
I think we thought about this, at least I did, and I can't speak for you, but I thought we had discussed it. I thought when he was initially going to be a free agent that I thought that that would, was a really good fit for him.
I did too. I thought there was a really good chance he would end up in New York. I thought they were one of the favorites to
the
land
suitors,
them. 713-780-ESPN. Every Wednesday at 2, the stories that we've been dying to talk about that we just haven't had a chance to, which there's a lot of them today, in case we missed it on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.